the elders were telling me this, saying, well, you know, we don't mind sharing this continent, but you do have to know your stories. And if you only know your stories from the last 200 years, you can't belong. You know, you can't take root. You can only ever be a transplant.
I'm Jonathan Green. You're listening to Lost and Found. This week, country. If you're listening to this in Australia, you're on country. The lands of Indigenous Australians, lands of First Nations people, people of that land for tens of thousands of years. I'm recording these words on the ancestral lands of the Boonwurrung, Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation. I respect that land and I respect the elders of this place, past, present, and emerging, and all First Nations people listening. This summer holiday season looks different. No big trips away. Perhaps you're planning a road trip, a hike, staycation. Has there ever been a better time to learn about this place? Time to listen, perhaps.
The simplest way to think of connecting the country is it's like seeing the place where you come from as perhaps your most beloved and oldest member of your family.
Claire G. Coleman, author of Terra Nullius and The Old Lie.
So no matter what else happens, that member of your family will always be a member of your family. And most Indigenous Australians in particular have a kind of a constant trajectory towards home. My country is in the south coast of Western Australia. It's near towns of Hopetown and Ravensthorpe and Bremer Bay. So it's this little spot of essentially what's on the edge of the arid coast. It's a windswept coast with granite and banksia trees and emus. And in our country, we've got the most biodiversity of hakeas anywhere in the world. My ancestral country is actually an international biosphere reserve as well, which is interesting because it's considered to be one of the most biodiverse parts of the world. Of course, I wasn't born there, and when I returned there, that was the catalyst for the writing of Terra Nullius. And since having actually visited the place, my lifetime trajectory since then has always been back towards there. My mind is going there constantly. She's my mother.
How complicated is the attachment to country, to place?
How complex did you say?
Yes.
Well, it'd be very complex if you're not attached.
Margot Neal, Senior Research Fellow, Senior Curator and Principal Indigenous Advisor to the Director of the National Museum of Australia, co-author of Songlines, The Power and Promise.
And I think for those who are, it's not that complicated. But however, when I describe it to you, you'll see that there's layers and layers. It's about layering, really. So songlines can be visualised as corridors or pathways of knowledge that crisscross the continent, which lay down over millennia. And there are, I mean, some people try and describe them as, you know, things like maps or parables or allegories, yeah, or scriptures and so on, but none of that does it, right? We can only get a sense of it, and basically its purpose is in non-text-based societies is to contain all the knowledge you need to live a sustainable life, like with each other on the planet and keep the planet alive. And so it encodes all the behaviours, the kinships, the marriage rules, the protocols, the ceremonies, the rituals, medicine. Everything we, you know, in this sort of Western world we live in is compartmentalised in heaps of little boxes. This is all integrated and it's all in the song lines, which are all written in the land. You would have heard the expression that our history is written in the land, and there's many examples. If those who went to the Songlines exhibition we'll see visual examples of all the imprints in the land of the stories that hold the knowledge. And, of course, the stories are stories that are memorable, that are tragic, lust, loss, like all epic sagas in the world, so you will remember them, and they're basically mnemonic. So landforms created by the ancestral beings in the story are mnemonics for the knowledge you need to know.
So this is where that notion of connection to country is in fact connection to vast systems of knowledge, to an understanding of things which go beyond that place but are of that place as well.
Yeah, well, and the other thing too is we talk about attachment. Everybody is attached to a place. They are that place. They carry that place. They care for that place. And that means nurturing it spiritually as well as caring for it physically, as well as knowing what it has to tell you and listening and learning the lessons of that place. Through that place, your relationships with everyone else sort of emanates. So it's a shared place, different levels. The idea of, you know, you hear Aboriginal people, we talk about places, everything, where we belong. Yeah, you hear the expression, who are you, where are you from? Well, that kind of comes from that. Where you're from is who you are, and doesn't matter whether you haven't been there since the day you're born. It doesn't matter, right? It's country and mind. You take it with you. You are it. And, you know, when you think of the process, you know, sort of in traditional times when, you know, a person was conceived, the spirit of a place that the woman passed at a certain critical moment entered the womb. But Murundu, and there's a whole story about how that Murundu, an actual story about how when his mum was pregnant, I won't go into it too far, but when, you know, his mum was pregnant, there were a certain set of events occurred at a certain kind of place, and they were read as the Murundu entering the mother's womb. It's also about responsibility, because that means that those people with these tokens, which are attached to a certain place, have responsibility for that place to keep it alive.
What does it feel like to stand in that place?
It's like when I first went there.
Claire G. Coleman.
It was like all my life for like 40 years I'd been looking for a place. I'd go to somewhere and it had banksia trees, and I'd feel a connection to that place. I'd go somewhere else that had the West Australian peppermint tree and feel a connection to that, and I'd see white sand and feel something. But then when I finally went to my ancestral country, it's like looking for a place forever and then finally finding it. Or like all my life I've been a jigsaw puzzle with an important piece missing, and then when I went there, that piece fell into place. And every time I go there, it's like a connection to a place is there that was never there before.
Now, a note before we take off. The care of Bruce Pascoe and Vicky Shukaroglu's book, Loving Country. A few considerations for travellers. Enjoy the opportunity. Share your experiences with friends and family. Remember that not every Aboriginal person you meet will necessarily have all the information you might be seeking. And for many, English will not be a first language. Move with care through the land. It's important for the preservation of culture and that land itself. Everything is interconnected. You'll probably see Aboriginal artifacts during your journey. Enjoy the presence of Australia's ancient past. Discover the ways it's retained today. But leave those objects where you see them. Now, let's get going. Bruce, take us to Gulaga.
Ooh, I remember looking at magazines. Part of my family's Yuin, so Gulaga is the heart of Yuin lore.
Bruce Pascoe and Vicky Shukaroglu, authors of Loving Country, A Guide to Sacred Australia.
And to climb it is really a special experience. And there are a number of Aboriginal groups conducting tours there. We're near Tilba Tilba.
Beautiful.
Near Naruma. And Tilba Tilba is famous for its cheese factory and its art shops and those things. But behind Tilba Tilba, only just behind, you can walk to it, is Gulaga. And she is part of this immense story, and that's the story that we tell in this book. And she's a very, very powerful mountain. Her lore is incredibly gentle. The story that she tells two-thirds of the way up that mountain is incredibly gentle. And in fact, it is all about women. You know, men do get a mention, but they're a byline. Women are extolled on the mountain, and the story and power of Mother Earth is expressed through reference to women. I go up there a lot, and every time I see something different, and I'm more and more moved each time that I'm there because of the power of this story and its generosity towards the planet and its reliance on the role of women. It really makes you stop and think about not just your own life, but the life of everybody around you and how we might better work together. There's a girdle of stones at two-thirds of the way up the mountain. In Yuin law, women can go to the very top of the mountain. Men are restricted to go no further than this belt of stones. But are they stones? They could be wind-eroded granite, or they could, in fact, be the shark, the whale, the dugong, the dolphin. They could be the mother and the child. Whatever it is, they represent for you and people the soul of the earth. So anyone can go there. Anyone can walk around those stones, and you might identify some of the stones I'm talking to you about. But to go with someone from the area, a Yuin person conducting that walk, will be an absolute revelation to you. And I think what I often say to people who are contemplating doing it, I say, well, go up, walk around the stones, preferably with an Aboriginal guide, and then you tell me afterwards, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you think? And when people talk about it afterwards, they never talk about weapons. Now, what culture on earth has in its story of itself a story without weapons? It is incredibly rare. The galleries of the whole world, wherever you go, there are spears, there are swords, there are machines of war. And this is the celebration of the human spirit, it seems, because they dominate art galleries, they dominate churches. And yet here, this spiritual life does not include a weapon.
We thought Laura would be just a quick trip up there.
Jonathan, Vicky's having a shot at me about my geography.
Okay.
I am, it's true. So I went through Carnarvon, which is also in the book, and an incredible place. Mm-hmm. Also a site known for its art and the stories told on walls in very, very different ways to the ones up in Laura. As I was on my way to Laura, I stopped at a few different communities and spoke with different people who said, oh, you know, go and see so-and-so and go to here and go to there. And so I went via Cooktown and Woodjil, talking to some of the oldies as I went, hearing stories about the Barrier Reef and Captain Cook and the old stories of some of those first encounters. Then I finally made it to Laura, which is a small community with a really, really rich history, incredibly stunning country of escarpments and big open plains and stories of incredible intensity and humanity and spirit and all sorts of emotion, talking about the animals and the plants of the place. So I spent quite a bit of time with the rangers and the elders up there and hearing their stories and going out bush and walking, and also looking at one of the times we were documenting signs of old life because of an objection they were trying to put together for yet another posed mining lease. And so these are the everyday challenges that the rangers and the elders face in trying to look after country. And this is an ongoing issue, and it's the same sort of repeated process there and all around.
And when you enter one of the galleries at Laura, The feature painting and engraving there is of a family of fruit bats. And that's what it's about. It's about family, and it's incredibly touching. And if you need no more information about Aboriginal philosophy, that painting would be sufficient.
It's important to remind people that when you say our part of the world, or if we say our lands, it is in the context that we as First Nations peoples, or First Nations, specifically Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander peoples, know that we belong to the lands. That includes spirit realms, waters, air, stars and seas. You know, it's all combined and entwined perpetually, I guess, you know, eternally.
Steve Hodder-Watt, Ladle Man from Gunnera, Mornington Island, photojournalist, broadcaster at Poor Media and Communications.
Gunnera is, in Ladle context, is home to Tuatu, the rainbow serpent, Manbul, Dildil and Jinjin are our creators for our island home. And we also have a resting place for Dog Story, Narambi, who travelled up from the south of the continent through the central corridor of the country. Gunnan is known colonially as Mornington Island, but, you know, specifically that name refers to the southwestern area of the island where the Presbyterian Church mission was set up in 1914, I think. And the island is the largest of the 22 Wellesley Islands, sitting just off the central coast of Gulf of Carpentaria in northwest Queensland, pretty much straight up from Mount Isa. As you can imagine, it's very isolated, but the cultural demographics includes the Kaidot Nation from nearby Bentinck Island, Yungal Nation from Forsyth, and Wanyan Gungalita nations from the coastal mainland as well. Gunnan Amanda, the collective First Nations community of Gunnan, you know, we're proud Indigenous peoples, just like all First Nations, and we still continue our cultural practices, fishing, hunting crab, turtles, dugongs, wallabies. But, you know, we also deal with the contemporary social cultural issues that happen everywhere and experienced by, you know, they're international brothers and sisters as well. Mm. We still have languages, although, you know, the connections are somewhat diminished. We've got Budulardal and Laga, our cultural dance and song, which is also impacted by colonisation and the continuation of that.
As white Australians travel to somewhere like Gunnera, what should they be bearing in mind, and how should they approach that place and its people?
It doesn't matter whether you're in the cities, on a regional property, or working out bush in a remote community. It's all Aboriginal land, or done by First Nations long before any, you know, Maccas or pastoralists and beepers came to save us. You know, our knowledges have been refined continuously for thousands and thousands of years, and that deserves to be held in higher regard. There's a discrepancy between the knowledges, as you're talking about the, I guess, the cultural, spiritual clashes. You know, ours have been here so long, and yet on a 12-hour clock, Europeans have, you know, barely been here several seconds, you know, but we're the ones that are required, you know, meant to these alien structures, you know, making assumptions or reinterpreting First Nations worldviews in colonial contexts. It's probably fairly easy to do a lot of do this, don't do this, or don't do that. But, you know, it's just a continuum for us more, you know, as Aboriginal peoples. We don't get to switch it off, or it's not a 9-to-5 job. So, you know, likewise should be that, you know, you remember you're always walking on the lands we belong to as well, and be conscious of that. You know, you might not see it, but we do, and the land sees us too. When the
sunshine says, come on in. Oh, Jonathan.
Bruce Pascoe, historian, co-author of Loving Country.
There's a lot I can't say about Birdsville because I travelled through there with local people, and some of the stories can't be told yet. But when we were there, we were taken to a place where Don Rowlands erected a very, very moving but modest memorial to his grandmother, and in a tiny oasis. And it's an incredibly beautiful thing. But while we were going there, we flew over old Aboriginal towns of domed houses. And in very recent times, some of those houses had been destroyed deliberately by the white landholders. And yet these towns are amongst some of the oldest in the world. And yet in Australia, you know, we can blow up a cave of Aboriginal art and get away scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
And we can bulldoze some old Aboriginal houses and get away scot-free. And yet what we're doing is we're destroying one of the founts of human development, of where humans first invented society. Now, there are very old houses in Turkey. No one would approach them with a bulldozer. In fact, they're on the maps of military so that they're not accidentally bombed. But in Australia, you can bomb anything. And, you know, Birdsville was very moving for me in that regard, because I think it's such an important indication of the depth of Aboriginal spirituality and life. And there are things there which I think in the next 18 months will be revealed as being some of the most important sites in the world. Bye.
The story of so many Aboriginal Australians post-settlement is of disconnection from land, of dispossession.
Yeah.
What does that do to both sides of that equation, to the people and to the country?
Well, we've got a fair idea.
Margot Neal.
The most recent being fire, pestilence, you know, drought, you know, just devastation of the country. There's no question if the country isn't being looked after and cared for as it was for 60 plus thousand years, then it will accumulate into the disaster we see now on an environmental level. But on other levels, I think no one who comes to this country from another country could possibly get the idea that the attachment to place is who they are. So if you desecrate or ruin or damage or invade in any way a place and detach the people from it, you are detaching them from their identity, from their spiritual sense of belonging, from everything. I mean, the real question is, if you live in Australia, this is what you've got to acknowledge. If you live in this country, and the elders were telling me this, they were saying, well, you know, we don't mind sharing this continent, but you do have to know your stories. And if you only know your stories from the last 200 years, you can't belong. You know, you can't take root. You can only ever be a transplant. And therefore, we'll never be able to relate to each other. So we can actually tell you your stories. So you know what this country's about, how it was created, the sort of systems that belong, and you at least have a internalized understanding, not a curiosity. You may be bleeding heart and fantastic to blackfellas, but unless you internalize the fact that if you live in this continent, we all have to have a songline. We have to have our own songlines. So I reckon the question should be, you know, to people these days is, so what's your songline? I mean, black fellas, yellow fellas, all colour fellas. You know, what's your story to this country? How do you feel you relate? You know, or how do you think you relate to all these other people? So really, but it comes back to country. And country in another way is more than land, clearly. It's a concept that, I mean, it is land, but it's a world view. Music is the medicine.
These beats got us out of control. You've been listening to Lost and Found. This time, country. You heard from Bruce Pascoe, Vicky Shukaroglu, Margot Neal, Steve Hodderwatt and Claire G. Coleman. Margot's exhibition, Songlines, Tracking the Seven Sisters, is now on in Perth at the Western Australian Museum. Producers are Mira Adler-Gillies and Lisa DeVissi. Technical production by Brendan O'Neill. I'm Jonathan Green.